See, Billy got picked on at school for things he couldn't change. He tried his best to play it cool, but in the seventh grade, you either fit right in or you don't fit. That's just the cold hard truth. I wish that I'd have been the friend that Billy never knew. I think it's time to come together, you and I can make a change. Maybe we can make a difference, make the world a better place. Look around and love somebody, we've been hateful long enough. Let the good Lord reunite us till this country that we love's undivided.
You either go to church or you're gonna go to hell. Get a job and work or you're gonna go to jail. I just kinda wish we didn't think like that. Why's it gotta be all white or all black? And when we gonna learn to try on someone's shoes sometimes?
That's right.
When we gonna start to see from someone else's eyes? I think it's time to come together. You and I can make a change. Maybe we can make a difference. Make the world a better place. Look around and love somebody. We've been hateful long enough. Let the good Lord reunite us to this country that we love's undivided. Oh yeah, undivided.
Welcome back. Top of the second hour of today's Road Warrior Radio broadcast this Thursday, March 7, 2024. And what we're talking about is heady stuff, I would say. You know, this is not stuff that most people think about. What is guiding and influencing our decision making and the decisions that we make, or so we think, so we imagine? We're talking about that and the profound and significant consequences it has. Obviously, if we live in a society where the mantra is that we live, we are governed, you know, it's a government of, by, and for the people, then the implications of what we're considering and the ramifications of it are significant and profound. And I think there's an argument to be made, the devil might make it, that, you know, if that is the case, government of, by, and for the people, then if it's bad, if it's tyrannical, if it's totalitarian, if it's autocratic, then they're getting the government they deserve. And I think it would be difficult for any one of us to argue in America that we've all done, any number of us have done all that we can do to stave off the effects of tyranny and totalitarianism. I think that it's pretty obvious that the more that we creep in a planned direction, and the more that every moment of our lives are planned and managed in largely imperceptible, subtle, you know, seemingly imperceptible sorts of ways, the worse things get. And, you know, Samuel Johnson's words are apropos here. The chains of habit are too light to be felt until they're too heavy to be broken. So at what point do people who have been crippled from birth, psychologically and so forth, become incapable of revolt? You know, to sort of round out the clip that we listened to in the last segment, which, by the way, again, was titled, Do We Live in a Brave New World? Aldous Huxley's Warning to the World, from Academy of Ideas, and that was published in the height of the COVID shenanigans, June 28, 2021. I would offer the caveat, by the way, that, you know, it wasn't so much Aldous Huxley's warning to the world as it was bad guys announcing their plans as a means of predictive programming, but also because, you know, that's just part of how the evil works. They have to announce their plans, as has been mentioned in the past. But Bertrand Russell was mentioned in that, and the quote was from The Impact of Science on Society, Russell's Impact of Science on Society. He also is part of an old-school generational bad guy family. Same folks working on the same bad ideas. And so from Bertrand Russell's Impact of Science on Society, or, you know, what does a cybernetic, technocratic dictatorship look like? If you watch Metropolis, the movie that was published 100 years ago, you get the idea. So Bertrand Russell wrote, sires will be chosen for various qualities, some for muscle, others for brains. All will have to be healthy, and unless they are to be fathers of oligarchs, they will have to be of a submissive and docile disposition. Didn't we hear that throughout the video that we just listened to? Children will, as in Plato's Republic, be taken from their mothers and reared by professional nurses. How many people understand why they think they need to send little Johnny or little Sally to nursery school or kindergarten at an increasingly younger age? Maybe we could start them by 3 or 4. Reared by professional nurses, what does that do? Gradually, by selective breeding, the congenital differences between rulers and ruled will increase until they become almost different species. A revolt of the plebes would become as unthinkable as an organized insurrection of sheep against the practice of eating mutton. And then parenthetically, Bertrand Russell adds, the Aztecs kept a domesticated alien tribe for the purposes of cannibalism. Their regime was totalitarian. So this is the direction that we have been nudged, influenced, manipulated, engineered over the last many decades, in particular, the last 100 years, you could say. So this is where we are today in this society. I would also submit to you, this is part of the broader Western esoteric impulse to return to Genesis 11, to finish the great unfinished work. That's the real great reset that they're pushing toward. And the idea of posthumanism is no return, you know, a sunsetting of this thing where man can cry out to his maker. That's where it's really headed. Anyway, before we get too much further down the road, I should offer the prayer. I didn't do that during the first hour. I wanted to sort of let this set the stage, if you will, because that question is ever present in my mind. The two-part question: who's in charge? Who decides? For me, that's the question in all things these days. And it's not so much on the face of things as it is, you know, what is the rudder in this circumstance, or who is really steering and guiding, who or what is steering and guiding what's going on here. And hence, you know, the prayer. Usually I include some mention of hypocrisy and or double-mindedness in the prayer, because we do a number of things. We say one thing, we do another thing. And James reminds us that to do so is double-minded. And a double-minded man is unstable in all his ways. According to God, ought not to expect that he will receive anything from the Lord. So that's not a way to be. That's something to avoid. So without further ado, I offer the prayer, because we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the worldly governors, the princes of the darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness, which are in the high places. So without further ado, Matthew 6 and Ephesians 6, the Lord's Prayer and the full armor of God. Our Father who is in heaven, hallowed be your name. Your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our debts as we forgive our debtors. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For yours is the kingdom, the power, and the glory forever. Amen. Lord, please help us to put on the full armor of God. Help us to gird our loins about truth, put on the breastplate of righteousness, shod our feet with the preparation of the gospel of peace. Help us to take up the shield of faith, put on the helmet of salvation, take up the sword of the Spirit, and pray at all times in the Spirit. In Jesus' name, I pray that no weapon formed against the righteous shall prosper, that all who walk in error would come to know the truth and Christ. Please reveal our hypocrisy and double-mindedness. I pray that unrepentant evildoers be brought swiftly to justice, that wickedness be brought swiftly to an end, righteousness be restored in the land, and poisonous trees and the offshoots like brands and agencies and efforts that have been discussed today, conceived in malice, would collapse under the weight of their own evil. In Jesus' name, amen. So, now, since we've set the stage broadly, we should probably sort of dive into the specifics. So we heard in the video, you know, bread and circuses. Yesterday I talked about stupidity. Don't be stupid and avoid, those who habitually engage in these kinds of practices, because as folks like Dietrich Bonhoeffer, Carlo Cipolla, and others have observed, the stupid person is a danger, both to himself and to those around him. So it's interesting, as I talked about this, I talked about this a little bit yesterday off air, and I mentioned on air yesterday that to discuss this, it has become taboo. You can't say it. It's part of the forbidden language in America today. To say stupid people, you can't say that now. There was a time I think you could, and there's a way to say it maybe, and I'm exaggerating for effect, obviously, but it has become verboten in the English language generally, like some other terms that you can't use now, that, you know, unless you're part of the approved class of folks. And who decides on that? Where do these things come from? How many people ask, you know, why can't we say this anymore, but we can say these things? It's very interesting when you start to think about historically how rulers would use very, let's say, medieval sort of techniques to control the people, like, you know, heads on pikes as you walk into or as you travel into a city or a country or whatever. Things like that, you know, people in stocks, so that everyone else gets the message, obviously. We don't have those things today, but we have a number of other things. We have this stuff that I talked about, that was kind of the subject of the first hour of today's broadcast, for example. We have the threat of things and, you know, the knowledge that the fear of the thing typically is greater than the thing itself, the fear or the threat of the thing. So that's at work. There are these subtle, pervasive control mechanisms at work in ways that most people don't realize. It's fascinating. So one of the things that was mentioned in the video was the bread and circuses for the twofold purpose. Firstly, to ensure that the citizens did not pay attention to political and social realities. And we have a sort of a hybrid of that in today's America, there is a political awareness to an extent that I would say correlates directly to the Lucius Trust theosophical contingent that wants people aware of those things so that man can be a co-conspirator in his own sort of overthrow, if you will. And that's, you know, the Green Revolution and all that kind of stuff. That stuff is deeply theosophical. It always has been. But there is this caricaturization of politics and political types in America. So we're aware, but we're not, there's no sophisticated approach to that. It's a caricaturized thing that keeps us involved, kind of like if we were talking about the latest nighttime TV drama at the water cooler the next day at work, something like that, but not really participating, not in a meaningful sort of way. And the other thing that does is it creates a degree of effort justification, confirmation bias in ways that people don't realize. Again, kind of like, you know, PBS is not doing fundraisers, NPR is not doing fundraisers because they need money. The fundraisers are so that you buy into the propaganda, literally, so that you own it. And that it is more deeply pervasive and effectual. So Bread and Circuses, so the citizens did not pay meaningful attention to political and social realities, and secondly, to promote docility and stupidity, which again gets back to yesterday's broadcast, and thus create a population that cared little for freedom. Isn't that interesting? And, you know, today in America, honestly, how many of us are willing to give up certain things? What are we willing to give up or live without if it means that we are not enslaved by certain things, or perhaps more importantly, that we ensure posterity has the best fighting chance of not being enslaved? Maybe it's not just about ourselves, but posterity. Where is the generation that thinks about posterity and not just itself? But, you know, back to the first part, I'm reminded of 2 Peter, the false teachers. 2 Peter chapter 2, for speaking out arrogant words of vanity, they entice by fleshly desires, by sensuality, those who barely escape from the ones who live in error, promising them freedom while they themselves are slaves of corruption. For by what a man is overcome, by this he is enslaved. By what a man is overcome, by this he is enslaved. So what are we, by what are we overcome? One of the other concepts that was mentioned in the video, Huxley's concept of hypnopedia, sleep teaching. You know, including creating Manchurian candidates of various forms. And, you know, how popular has that become? You know, people do it all the time, fall asleep to this or that. And now you have the apps. I don't know about you, but when I see the commercials for the apps that let this noise play while you're sleeping, it sounds demonic to me. It sounds creepy. We'll go to the phones when we come back. Stick around. More right after this break.
Have you been looking for a trusted long-term storable food company? We have a solution for you. Simply Clean Foods is dedicated to providing the best quality food you can buy next to fresh from a farmer's market. Our line of resealable fruits, vegetables, and meats are suitable for everyday use, and you won't have to worry about throwing away valuable groceries ever again. Our food is completely GMO-free, and our stringent quality controls, plus testing for heavy metals, makes us unique in the storable foods market. Simply Clean Foods' primary focus is to bring clean food to people all around the world and change the way we look at freeze-dried food in our daily cooking. When you purchase from Simply Clean Foods, not only will you be receiving high-quality food, but you will also be supporting veterans in need across the country and those who are affected by natural disasters.
Go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on long-term food storage in the rotating sponsors banners to support RBN.
Simply Clean Foods. Do it today.
Do you begin to smell some funky little things going on? Let me share this story with you. It's not so much a story, it's something I wrote years ago. Read your history, people. Stock markets collapse on Friday. Bank seizures, closures, holidays take place after business hours on Friday. Do currencies or governments also collapse on Friday? Tomorrow's Friday. Will the end come on this Friday, or will the inevitable collapse hold off for a while? The next round of the worst financial crisis in 100 years is coming, people, and the government is out to make you and I pay for it. And will your savings survive a global banking wipeout? What happens when the U.S. sees hyperinflation? What if taxes soar not only for the rich? Can you survive if the stock market tanks? Look, between a stock market wipeout, waves of bank failures, soaring government spending that will lead to hyperinflation, and the destruction of the dollar's value, isn't it time that you prepare for the uncertainty which lies ahead? Protect your money now or forever kiss it goodbye. My friends, I offer you over 6 decades' experience of hard asset ownership and knowledge, and I'm prepared to handle the smallest detail in the balanced protection of your portfolio. For as the future of uncertainty continues to blanket this nation of ours, I believe that I can offer you the privacy, safety, security, and possibly some profitability which you deserve. And so I invite you to visit SierraMadrePreciousMetals.com for further information regarding protecting your wealth. Or call me, Jeffrey Bennett, at 602-799-8214. Or by email at KettleMoraine, Ltd. at Cox.net for private consultation. Once again, our phone number, 602-799-8214. It's almost Friday.
Welcome back. All right, to the phones. Nancy in California, thanks for calling. Welcome.
Yes, I just wanted to call and thank you for saying that prayer. I think that's something that this nation really needs, is a lot more of, and that's,
I agree,
one of the things they eliminated before they started taking away our other freedoms. So thank you. And
you're welcome.
I would say amen.
Right on. Well,
everything you said.
Appreciate that. It's definitely, I think, much needed. And it's the thing that I think we're gaslighted to believe we're not supposed to do. It's one of those taboo things that's not said as taboo, but it's, you know, we're gaslighted, I think, along those
Absolutely.
Lines. And we are encouraged.
And I think that shows some bravery. Sorry.
Oh, well, I think we're encouraged to believe that we're not supposed to, we don't need to, and, you know, any sort of reason to dissuade people from doing that. And I think based largely on that, and obviously the times we're living in, it definitely can't hurt. I believe it's the most powerful thing we can do on Earth. So,
absolutely. I mean, why would it be one thing they wanted to eliminate from schools and, you know, just Christianity and the Bible and all of that? So, absolutely.
Encouraging school children to believe that it's unnecessary, it's anachronistic, you know, that's superstitious. Why would you do that? We live in a scientifically advanced society. You don't need to do that. And during COVID, you know, you can't gather even in the parking lot of the church in your own vehicle individually and pray together.
Yeah.
Why is it so important to do that?
You've seen fairy tales where the darkness covers the land. Mm-hmm. And really, I feel that is what has happened as it has been eliminated and purged from our society. The light is disappearing and the darkness is overtaking. So I think if you just every little thing like that, it's not a little thing, it's actually a big thing.
Yeah.
And anyway, I enjoy your program. Don't always get to listen, but it's a treasure when I can. And you have a wonderful day.
Thanks, Nancy. You as well. Much appreciated. I couldn't agree more. I appreciate the way that you put that, Nancy. I think that you're absolutely right. It's a darkness that is settling on the land as we are socially engineered. That's a big reason for the subject matter of the first hour and continuing into the second hour of today, and really the theme. And this, you know, is part of the broader theme of this broadcast for this year, which is war. Essentially, we're at war, and that's why each day I try to begin or include in the broadcast the prayer, because again, Ephesians 6:12, you know, we wrestle not against flesh and blood. It's, I can say those words, we can read those words, and yet how difficult is it to, even as we read those words, to remember constantly that that's the, I believe that's the front lines of the battle, and yet we're encouraged to fight against one another. And so I agree, you know, as the learned helplessness settles in and we buy into the gaslighting that we're not supposed to pray, or that it's anachronistic or ineffectual or whatever, or taboo or silly or whatever, I believe that there is a direct correlation to, at least conceptually, what we see happening in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, and that the restrainer is taken out of the way. Why would that happen? Except maybe that people stop crying out to the Lord. Why would the restrainer be taken out of the way? And I think there's, it's difficult, if not impossible, to argue that we are being induced to not do those things. This is why I mention the scene from Saving Private Ryan, the stabbing scene, for example. We're encouraged to suicide ourselves and one another. Just be quiet. Let it, you know, let it happen. It'll all be over soon. Don't resist. And rather than trying to take matters into our own hands, as Paul reminds us, vengeance is mine, I will repay, saith the Lord, we should offer those things up and, you know, invite the God of heaven, the creator of heaven and earth, into circumstances. Stick around. We'll be right back after this short break.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
People often write to tell us what has happened for them since starting Extendivite. Allow me to read one. This product has been a godsend for my father, who suffered from a heart attack about 2 years ago. He was prescribed medications for his condition, which was so serious, he almost died. But he hasn't been able to afford most of the medications. After researching alternatives that were more affordable, he tried Extendivite. Since taking it, he has consistently lower blood pressure and experiences less angina. We are currently on our fifth bottle. I enthusiastically recommend this product, and I am grateful that it is available. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit extendivite.com. That's extendivite.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Are you one of the millions of people who feel like there is a dark cloud hanging over their heads whenever they're using pharmaceutical drugs? For some, the short-term relief can turn into an opioid addiction nightmare. Have you ever wondered why CBD oil is a billion-dollar industry? It's because it works better than opioids and is actually healthy for you. However, CBD oil is stripped of all other helpful compounds found in the hemp plant. According to neuroscientists, the whole hemp plant, otherwise known as hemp paste, is even more effective than the chemically processed CBD oil. Are you ready to take back your health? You can try hemp paste for the price of a cup of coffee.
Hemppaste.com/RBN. Free shipping on orders over $50. See the banners for hemp paste at republicbroadcasting.org and visit hemppaste.com/RBN.
Find your inner rebel at Dixie Republic, the world's largest Confederate store, located in Travelers Rest, South Carolina. The anti-white, anti-Christ, anti-Southern world ends at the asphalt. Welcome to God's country. Log on to DixieRepublic.com to view our Southern merchandise, from flags to t-shirts to artwork. At the store, browse through our extensive collection of belt buckles and have a custom-made leather belt handcrafted in our Johnny Reb's Gun and Leather Shop. That's DixieRepublic.com, where you can meet all of your Southern needs.
Support those that support the network. Support Dixie Republic at DixieRepublic.com. Email proudsouthern123@gmail.com and let them know that RBN sent you.
Welcome back. So, you know, speaking of and to the reality of this thing that we're supposed to pretend doesn't exist and the social engineering that is fully underway, but again, that we're supposed to pretend doesn't exist, it's so ironic. On this day, speaking of, you know, the on this day kind of stuff, I try to feature that, although I have been remiss. Yesterday, for example, we skipped the Battle of the Alamo. How do you have a broadcast on a Texas network deep in the heart of Texas and not mention the Battle of the Alamo on March 6th. I don't know. I did it yesterday. Anyway, I have tried to be more thoughtful about that. You know, we did play the excerpt from Who's On First yesterday, the Abbott and Costello routine, Who's On First, because yesterday, in addition to the anniversary of the Alamo siege, was also the anniversary of the induction of Enos Slaughter into the Baseball Hall of Fame, and coincidentally, Lou Costello's birthday. So, you know, we played that excerpt. But, you know, today is March 7th, and Amanda Gorman was born on March 7, 1998. This is a young lady who became the first National Youth Poet Laureate in 2017. And according to Wikipedia, she studied sociology at Harvard College and graduated cum laude as a member of Phi Beta Kappa. So you can, I think, infer what kind of raw material and end product, to maybe borrow from what Mario Sevilla was talking about on the steps of Sproul Hall, is being created there. And I think the evidence is in the fact that, you know, The Hill We Climb was the poem that she recited at the Biden inauguration. And if you read about this, if you read about The Hill We Climb, it's a very mystical, magical kind of product, I think. And it's interesting that, I don't know, the way that I read it, you know, she isn't given direct and full credit. It's very, I'll give you an idea of what I'm talking about. Let me see if I can explain this. So from the Wikipedia entry on The Hill We Climb, it says, The Hill We Climb is a spoken word poem written by American poet Amanda Gorman and recited by her at the inauguration of Joe Biden in Washington, D.C. on January 20, 2021. Okay. But if you continue reading, you get a different flavor, I think. The poem was written in the weeks following. You know, the poem was written, first of all, you and or I would not write this way. We would write, I would write, she wrote the poem, or, you know, Gorman wrote the poem in the weeks following. The poem was written is a, you know, immediately after she's given credit, it starts to get weird in the very next sentence. With significant passages written on the night of January 6, 2021, which is interesting. You know, so there's the January 6th mention in response to the storming of the United States Capitol, the FBI storming of the United States Capitol. Gorman was 22 years old when she recited the poem, making her the youngest inaugural poet ever. So, you know, again, it's this litany of bizarre coincidences and things that just don't necessarily add up or make sense. I don't know. Maybe. Is it possible? I guess. Is it plausible? Not hardly, you know, to put it simply. And so, in this poem, she writes, apparently, we are striving to forge our union with purpose. Who's we? I'm curious. To compose a country committed to all cultures, colors, characters, and conditions of man. This is a very, I would say, humanistic sort of turn of phrase and multicultural. It's so many things, it's nothing. You know, we played the Spencer Smith thing where he quoted B.B. Warfield and the idea that, you know, if everything is stamped with this thing, in that case, Christianity, then if everything is that, then nothing is that. And so that's kind of where we are in America, unfortunately. We embrace everything, and in so doing, we embrace nothing, essentially. I've talked about this in the past, you know, speaking of the social engineering, that's sort of the subject of this broadcast yesterday, this week, really. What do we hold on to? America is a unique kind of place, being the cultural melting pot of the world, the great American experiment. It's fascinating how we don't really hold on to anything. It's sort of a cliche that when immigrants come here, the folks who come, for example, from the European countries with the old world trades, for some reason, that's almost never passed on to posterity. It's almost never passed on to their children. And we have the systems now. If you go to Home Depot or Lowe's or wherever, you'll see systems for vinyl siding or roofing or whatever. And they're idiot-proof systems, but all they really do is create idiots who don't remember how to do anything. We have truss plants that create trusses, and no one knows how to frame rafters anymore. Back in the old days, when you moved into an area, you leaned on the neighbors and the neighborhood. A neighborhood work party was convened, and there was a potluck. It was a, you know, cause for celebration, among other things, neighbors getting together and getting to know one another, or know one another better, and you would build a house together as neighbors. It's inexpensive. It's kind of the glue of the community, you know, getting to know one another, working together, helping one another. You need to be a halfway decent person, not necessarily leaning on social convention and the grace of your neighbors. You know, you need to be not entirely off-putting so that your neighbors will, you know, want to help. So it's this cohesive sort of environment that's created. Neighbors helping neighbors, getting to know one another. Inexpensive way to build a house. And, you know, all the stories that go along with that. It's great stuff. Versus what we have today. Institutionalized, sterilized, dumbed down systems that, you know, now we have the beehive, where specialized, or the anthill. Specialized people can do specialized things. The rest of us don't know how to do a thing outside of our specialized discipline. And I can hear George Bernard Shaw saying, you know, "Sir, madam, will you please justify your existence?" It's fascinating to witness this. I don't know about you, but to me, it's fascinating to see these shifts. So Amanda Gorman, sociology, Harvard College, cum laude, Phi Beta Kappa. This is a particular brand of work product. This is what is deemed socially acceptable in America today. You know, you can be anyone. You can even be Amanda Gorman. Well, this is the acceptable work product. No particular offense to Miss Gorman. But, you know, at the ripe old age of, what is she now? 26, I think she turns 26 today. My goodness. What did you know? What did you or I know at the ripe old age of 26? But we are, you know, again, we are encouraged to believe in this kind of myth. I did a whole series of broadcasts on the myth-making of the German people. the American culture has taken myth-making to a whole new level, I think, with this kind of thing. Maybe it's just me. Anyway, speaking of the mind tricks we play on ourselves, or that we allow to be played on us, and that we are, we become co-conspirators in. I want to give you another quick video before the end of this segment. Heuristics and biases in decision making explained. Go ahead, sir.
Every day you make decisions and judgments. Sometimes you're able to think about them carefully, but other times you make them on the fly using little information. This is where heuristics come in. Heuristics are straightforward rules of thumb that we develop based on our past experiences. They're cognitive tools that help us make quick decisions or judgments. Life would be exhausting if we had to deliberate over every one of the hundreds of choices we make every day. So instead, we use our heuristics as shortcuts to make judgments about the world around us. For example, rather than spending time deciding what to wear every day, you might have some default outfits. Or when faced with a lunch menu with too many options, you may opt for what you've enjoyed in the past. Heuristics aren't about making the perfect decision or judgment, just about making one quickly. Heuristics play a role in our reasoning about the broader world, too. As an example, consider the rate of violence in the world over the past century. Is the world more or less violent in the past 20 years than previously? Heuristic reasoning might lead us to think that the world is more violent today than it has been in the past. Every day, we're confronted with images of tragedy in the news and on social media. We might reasonably assume that the world is more violent today than ever before using what's called an availability heuristic. That is, examples of violence that are so readily available, we just naturally assume the world is more violent today. But in fact, the world is more peaceful today than ever before in human history. We may hear a lot about violent events, but in terms of raw numbers, fewer people die today at the hands of other human beings than ever before. So that heuristic about how violent the world is incorrect. In fact, a slew of other heuristics can easily lead us to mistaken conclusions. And it doesn't matter how smart or well-educated you are. Anyone can place too much trust in the mental shortcuts they use to make sense of the world. Take this example. Let's say a person tests positive for a rare disease, one that only 1 in 1,000 people have. What is the likelihood that he actually has the disease? Most of us would say the likelihood is very high based on the test results alone. But what if the results were inaccurate 10% of the time? If the false positive rate is 10%, a common number in medical tests, then it is highly unlikely our patient has the disease. In fact, based on the prevalence of the disease and the test result, we can be 99% sure he doesn't have the disease. This is because the odds of getting a false positive result, 1 in 10, are much higher than the odds of actually having the disease, 1 in 1,000. But in multiple studies, physicians routinely get this wrong, overestimating the likelihood that their patient actually has the disease. Psychologists call this the representativeness heuristic. People assume an individual case is more representative than it actually is. Our political views can especially suffer from an over-reliance on heuristics. Just consider how we deal with political issues. We'll often let our political identities and our heuristics about how right we think they are stand in lieu of important details and information we need to have an informed viewpoint. Because our heuristics can so easily lead us to faulty conclusions, it's important to be humble about our views. In light of our fallibility, we have to do something that doesn't come easy. We must recognize that the world is an uncertain place, and that our judgments about it are often wrong. We ought to listen to opinions we may initially consider wrong or even offensive. Our intuitions are useful, even necessary when it comes to making quick judgments about the world, but that doesn't mean they're correct. Recognizing the flawed nature of your thinking is a bold first step to challenging it.
Interesting stuff. Anyone can place too much trust in the mental shortcuts they use to make sense of the world. Heuristics. And again, you know, Kahneman and Tversky come in. I mentioned them yesterday and I think the day before. Heuristics, attribute substitution, regression to the mean, these kinds of concepts. So rare disease, likelihood he has it, 10%. Testing error rate equals highly unlikely, 99% sure he doesn't have it. Does that remind you of anything? Maybe COVID? maybe PCR testing, and Kerry Mullis saying it's not made for that. Oh, we lost Kerry Mullis shortly before COVID. Around the time that we were conducting Operation Crimson Contagion, the summer before COVID and the summer before the Event 201 tabletop exercise that just so happened to coincide directly with what happened, or we were told happened, a few months later. So was this a giant mind trick that was played on people? Interesting, isn't it? When you start to think about these things, I don't know about you, but that's where my mind goes immediately, and the pattern recognition type stuff. My mind also thinks of there was the episode back in 2009. Some crazy stuff going on. And I talked about it from that day forward to this. Not many people remember these things. Some of us remember certain things. And it's, I think it's important to keep telling those stories, lest posterity forgets. Some of those things are. And then the lie gets told loudly and often enough that the lie becomes the truth, or, you know, that's the idea. Anyway, in this case, back in 2009, there was the H1N1 shenanigans, and White House Press Secretary Robert Gibbs, gave the briefing on April 30, 2009. He talked about Stephen Chu's, the lead advance for the security detail for Energy Secretary Stephen Chu. This guy went to Mexico in advance of Secretary Chu's visit, arriving there on April 13th, began feeling ill on the 16th, developed a fever on the 17th, returned to the United States on the 18th. And he went through all of that stuff in the press briefing. And then he was asked, I don't remember who it was, but, you know, one of the people in the press corps asked, considering that one member of the advance team has, you know, had developed symptoms, been infected, aren't there any further actions being taken? This is a concern, right? It's scary, right? Robert Gibbs. And Gibbs says, well, again, let's understand that we are now almost twice the limit removed from a symptomatic window that one would see for incubation. So anybody that went on the trip, anybody that went in support of the trip, it is highly, highly, highly unlikely. And it always stuck in my mind that he said highly three times. Highly, highly, highly unlikely that, I think we're 13 days ago this morning, you know, in excess almost twice the limit on the window where anyone would have symptoms. So, yeah, no big deal. We're out of the woods. There's nothing to be concerned about here. And that always stuck with me, obviously, talking about it to this day. Highly, highly, highly unlikely that anyone is symptomatic at this point, that there's any reason, any cause for concern. And so you skip forward from there. And by the way, there were the folks who ended up with brain injury because of the H1N1 vaccines. Back then, it was $64 million, I think, that was paid out. And we don't talk about that. We don't talk about the explosion in VAERS, the fact that the system has been overwhelmed by claims to the extent that, you know, essentially there's a new system, and what was the other statistic? Let me just grab that real fast, lest I misspeak. The other system. Where is that? Countermeasures Injury Compensation Program, CICP. So you can go to, let me see. Yeah. So the HRSA website, HRSA.gov, Health Resources and Services Administration. This page is titled Countermeasures Injury Compensation Program, CICP, data. Aggregate data as of January 1, 2024. That's pretty current. So let's just skip down to the data. CICP data for fiscal years 2010 to 2024 as of January 1, 2024. Okay, so 2010 to 2024 as of January 1, 2024. What does it say? Total CICP claims ever filed, as in when to when, 2010 to 2024 as of January 1, 2024. So 13 years and a month, basically, let's say, broadly speaking. Total claims ever filed, 13,406. Pending review or in review, 10,650. Wow, that's a lot over the last 13 years. Why? Decisions, 2,756. Well, you got to keep reading. So as of January 1, 2024, the CICP has rendered decisions on 2,214 COVID-19 claims. Oh, now we're getting somewhere. So out of the 2,700 decisions, 2,214 of those are COVID-19 claims. See below for more COVID-19 data on claims filed, administrative and medical eligibility decisions, and benefit determinations. CICP data for COVID-19 claims as of January 1, 2025. Oh, that's interesting. So again, last 13 years and change, 13,406 claims, okay? Approximately 1,000, that would be an average about 1,000 a year, right? No. Why not? Well, keep reading. Total COVID-19 CICP claims filed, 12,854. So wait a minute. 13,406 minus 12,854, 552 claims in the years prior to the COVID shenanigans. So 12,854 divided by 13,406 equals 96% of the claims are COVID claims. Interesting. So sometimes, you know, we can place too much trust in the mental shortcuts that we use to make sense of the world. Maybe a rare disease, the likelihood he has it, 10% testing error rate in the PCR test, maybe. Even Fauci talked about that. Equals highly unlikely, 99% sure he doesn't have it. This is one of the ways that we can be conscripted to becoming co-conspirators and gaming ourselves and one another. I hope it was informative, perhaps even edifying. As always, it truly is an honor and a pleasure. Take care. God bless. We'll catch you on the other side.
Tahibo Tea Club's original Pure Pau d'Arco Super Tea comes from the only tree in the world that fungus does not grow on. As a result, it naturally has antifungal, anti-infection, antiviral, antibacterial, anti-inflammation, and anti-parasite properties. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit drinksupertea.com. The first word is drink, spelled D-R-I-N-K, then the word super, then the word tea. The complete website is drinksupertea.com or call us at 818-965-9113, Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-965-9113. DrinkSuperTea.com.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.